Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to Pick a Flick, the show where you pick a film and we talk about it. Simple, except today we are going back into the realms of television, as this is our Pick a TV Show second special.
I'm Tony Black, your host, and I'm joined by my old mate Matt Latham.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It feels like it's been an age since I was last on a podcast of yours.
I know, it's...
It feels like minutes.
It's not like we've recorded a podcast for a different show at the same time as this, is it? I mean, the very idea.
Yeah, it is actually.
Oh, right. Okay. Never mind. Yes, we're combining forces to do a couple of things. And we're going to start by talking about a show in particular that is an enormously popular show from the 1990s. Do you want to tell everyone what they already know and tell them what show we're doing?
The show we're going to talk about is a little known show you may have heard of. Called Friends.
Friends, which was an American television sitcom created by David Crane and Marta Kaufman, which originally aired on NBC from September the 22nd, 1994 to May 6th, 2004, lasting 10 seasons. The show starred Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, Lisa Kudrow, Matt LeBlanc, Matthew Perry and David Schwimmer, and revolved around six friends living in Manhattan in the 1990s and, as I say, into the 2000s. Friends received critical acclaim throughout its run, becoming one of the most popular television shows of all time. The series was nominated for 62 Primetime Emmy Awards, winning the Outstanding Comedy Series Award in 2002 for its eighth season.
For its eighth, wow.
The show ranked number 21 on TV Guide's 50 Greatest TV Shows of All Time and a number 7 on Empire Magazine's The 50 Greatest TV Shows of All Time. In 1997, the episode The One with the Prom Video was ranked number 100 on TV Guide's 100 Greatest Episodes of All Time. And in 2013, Friends ranked number 24 on the Writers Guild of America's 101 Best Written TV Series of All Time and number 28 on TV Guide's 60 Best TV Series of All Time. And Mundo Estrano in 2014 ranked it the best series of all time.
So what?
Mundo Estrano, which is a monthly fun facts magazine for Brazilian teenagers. So a very, very big publication. No disrespect if you're listening from Mundo Estrano. Good for you. But anyway, the point is, Friends is critically lauded, critically loved, and on hard rotation on Comedy Central, in the UK at least, and I'm sure in America. because obviously it had 200 odd episodes. It will be in syndication and it will be running, I think, forever. You pretty much could have a Friends TV channel, I think, and it wouldn't be a shock. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that come the nuclear holocaust, the cockroaches would just be watching Friends.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who didn't watch Friends, really. I mean, funnily enough, actually, I say this. I worked with somebody at work who I work with, who's probably like 10 years older than me, 15 years older than me, like late 40s, has never watched it. And that shocked me, because that person would have been 20s when Friends was airing at the beginning, mm-hmm. and through the 90s. So I suppose, is it as popular and is it as beloved as everyone remembers?
Oh, he got 52 million viewers for his final episode.
52 million?
I think it's 52.6. And let's just fact check.
Is that just in the US?
I think that was the US.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, 52.46. Flipping heck. The one before was like 24.51.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's insane.
Like, when you think about what, we're 60 million people in the UK?
Yeah, that's effectively the entire population of Britain.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And that just goes to show its popularity.
Considering it never really cropped above, like, 30, like, occasionally cropped over 30 on its big episodes.
Yeah,
and it was averaging around 23 million a week.
23 million a week.
Which is still stupid amounts.
It's insane.
Especially when you compare it to today, when, like, some shows on the CW are getting renewed on below a million.
Yeah. It was a juggernaut, wasn't it? You know, it was a cultural and a juggernaut. But before we get to talking about that, let's go into a little bit more about the premise, because for those of you who've never watched Friends, I don't know if you exist beyond that one person I've spoken to.
I'll be quite concerned if we've somehow managed to tap into an audience
who've never seen Friends.
Yes.
Wow. If you are out there, let us know, because I can't quite believe it. But the premise is that in the pilot episode, Rachel Green, played by Jennifer Aniston, flees her wedding day and seeks out her childhood friend, Monica Geller, played by Courtney Cox, who's a New York City chef. They become roommates, and Rachel joins Monica's social circle of single people in their mid-20s. Struggling actor Joey Tribbiani, played by Matt LeBlanc. How you doing? Business professional Chandler Bing. I like the way they put business professional on Wikipedia, because nobody quite knows Chandler's job.
That's one of the ongoing jokes.
That's one of the ongoing jokes, one of the many ongoing jokes. Played by Matthew Perry. Masseuse and musician Phoebe Buffay, played by Lisa Kudrow. And newly divorced paleontologist Ross Geller, played by David Schwimmer, who's also Monica's older brother.
To be single, okay? I just want to be married again.
And I just want $1 million.
Rachel? Oh, God, Monica, hi. Thank God. I just went to your building and you weren't there. And then this guy with a big hammer said that you might be here. And you are.
Can I get you some coffee?
Decaf. Hey, everybody, this is Rachel and another Lincoln High survivor. This is everybody. This is Chandler and Phoebe and Joey. And you remember my brother Ross?
Sure.
Hey.
So you want to tell us now, or are we waiting for four wet bridesmaids?
Oh, God. Well, it started about a half hour before the wedding. I was in this room where we were keeping all the presents, and I was looking at this gravy boat. This really gorgeous Limoges gravy boat. And all of a sudden I realized, sweet and low, I realized that I was more turned on by this gravy boat than by Barry. And then I got really freaked out, and that's when it hit me how much Barry looks like Mr. Potato Head. You know, I mean, I always know he looked familiar, but anyway, I just had to get out of there, and I started wondering, why am I doing this and who am I doing this for? So anyway, I just didn't know where to go, and I know that you and I have kind of drifted apart, but you're the only person I knew who lived here in the city.
Who wasn't invited to the wedding?
Oh, I was kind of hoping that wouldn't be an issue.
To support herself, Rachel becomes a waitress in Central Perk, which is a Manhattan coffee house where the group often hangs out. When they're not there, the six are usually at Monica and Rachel's nearby West Village apartment, or Joey and Chandler's across the hall.
Mid-twenties.
Well, let's all pick a few things there, right? Mid-20s.
Yeah.
they are not...
Like, what, I'm 30 and you're...
I'm 33.
Yeah, and...
Almost at 34 then. I'm ageing up. Yeah. Dying up. but it's... Yeah. They were older than that, though, I think. Or they were nearly a bit older than that.
But I'm pretty sure they're younger than we are now when it was there. And when you look at the apartment, Monica and Rachel's apartment...
Well, it's been interesting because a lot of people have said that there's no way... Well, Monica probably could have afforded it because she was a chef. Rachel wouldn't have been able to afford all her rent because she's just a waitress. When she got a job at Bloomingdale's later on and she becomes a fashion buyer and all this, she'd been earning good money. But Joey and Chandler... Oh, actually, to be fair, Chandler... there's a running joke with Chandler's paying for Joey, isn't he?
Yeah.
But then when Chandler moves out in, like, season five, Joey's still in... And quite often, Joey's living on there on his own, you know, at times. How does... He can't afford that, surely.
I know he's getting royalties for something.
Well, it must be. Until the end of the series when he becomes quite successful, doesn't he, in the soap opera world?
Yeah.
So he's earning good money. But yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not they could have afforded those lavish apartments anyway. But Central Perk, which obviously is the main... Friends is very much... There are other locations, but it tends to be a very much... Often a two-set sitcom, doesn't it? In many respects. You've got...
Three.
Two or three. You've got the three sets. So you've got the two flats, the two apartments, and you've got Central Perk, haven't you? So Central Perk has become one of those
iconic
places, hasn't it?
I can't remember where we were. I think
Liverpool. Yeah. I remember what you're going to say. Yeah,
it's Liverpool. And we was there for a friend's stag do.
Yeah.
I think. And we ended up. We ended up in a cafe.
I think we were recovering, weren't we? This was recovery in the morning, wasn't it?
It's recovery in the morning. Mm. It ended up in a cafe.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much attempting to try and replicate Central Perk.
Central Perk, yeah.
Yeah. It failed miserably. It just had the Friends, like the menu in the Friends font.
Yeah.
The Central Perk logo.
It looked nothing like Central Perk, did it?
But then you had like all these uni students sitting down drinking big, massive cups of coffee.
But you, apparently, though, I was reading recently, they are... I don't know where, possibly in London or several cities around the world, they are opening Central Perk replicas for people to come and hang out in. Then they're going to have the whole thing looking like the Friends set. So you'll have the couch, which nobody ever sits on except them.
There's a BuzzFeed article saying that, like, for years, you actually see the reserve sign. There's a reserve sign on the table.
How can they possibly do that every single time? Like... Can that really be done? That they would reserve it every day? And that isn't there an episode as well where somebody's sitting there and they come in and go, they look at them as if, what? I'm sure there is. And then person, or Phoebe goes, get out!
but I'm pretty sure that there's like the screenshots. I think it was BuzzFeed of all play. Well, BuzzFeed probably would have failed.
No, they would, yeah.
Where they see throughout the seasons a little reserve sign on the deck, on the actual table in front of them. The only thing I can think of is it's just Gunther reserving it for him. Because one of the ongoing jokes was his infatuation with Rachel.
Gunther, played by James Michael Tyler, Gunther was interesting. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about the characters later, but Gunther was interesting because, he's in love with Rachel, and it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But usually in long-running TV shows like this, you end up getting an episode that features a character who's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
But Gunther never got that, did he?
No.
He was always background, and then occasionally he'd get a line, or occasionally a bit of farcical moment.
And that's like that actor's like 10 years worth of rent, mortgage. Yeah. That's his mortgage paid for 10 years.
There'd be whole seasons or whole tracts of episodes where Gunther wouldn't even say anything. But he's always there.
Yeah,
it's very interesting.
But they're saying there's that, but then you have got the two apartments in terms of the sets, and they're very different considering they're in the same.
They are, aren't they?
Who was the architect of that building? I mean, when you think
about
it...
It's like they wedged two different buildings together.
But then you've got the wide open space of Monica and Rachel's apartment and the quite claustrophobic section of Joey and Monica. Because you've recently watched this. Here's a question. Is there any episode where all six of them are in Joey and Chandler's apartments?
There are scenes where they're all in there. But they are a lot more scarce than all of them in the bigger apartment, which is Monica and Rachel's, or Monica and Chandler's, depending on where you are in the show. But it never feels quite right when they're all in Joey and Chandler's, because it's too small.
It's apartment looks like it could have fitted Joey and Chandler in them as well, the times they spent in it.
Exactly. It is strange. And I think it's the consequence of trying to create a relatively believable set that's big enough in order to accommodate six regular characters in the same room at the same time.
Yeah.
But obviously, yeah, they live in these two apartments. Episodes typically depict the Friends' comedic and romantic adventures and career issues, such as Joey auditioning for roles or Rachel seeking jobs in the fashion industry. The six characters each have many dates and serious relationships, such as Monica with Richard Burke, played by Tom Selleck, and Ross with Emily Wolfram, who's played by Helen Baxter.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Ross.
I'm Emily.
Hello, I'm Emily. Hello.
I'm British, you know.
Well, never.
I know.
Oh, wow.
All British people sound like me.
Wow.
And if they don't, they're slurring drugs like this.
Oh, hello, the light, what's his face from Frasier? Daphne's brother.
Daphne's brother, yeah. Oh, right, mate, yeah.
Yeah, which is.
I'm from Manchester, I am, yeah.
Have it, come on.
We'll do Frasier one day.
We'll do him one day.
We'll do Frasier.
We'll do what Frasier one day. Well, one day, we're going to go down, sit in front of a TV, and watch that poor person.
Poor Kelsey Grammer. Oh. Ross and Rachel's intermittent relationship is the most often recurring storyline.
Is it?
I know, shocker. During the 10 seasons of the show, they repeatedly date and break up. Even while Ross briefly marries Emily, he and Rachel ultimately have a child. Chandler and Monica date and marry each other, and Phoebe marries Mike Hannigan, played by Paul Rudd, who appears in the last couple of seasons. Other frequently recurring characters include Ross and Monica's parents, Jack and Judy, in Long Island, Ross's ex-wife, Carol, and her lesbian lover, Susan, and their son, Ben, and Ross's son, Ben, with Carol. Central Perk barista, Gunther, as we've said before. Chandler's ex-girlfriend, Janice. Janice! Oh. My. God! Chandler Bing! And Phoebe's twin sister, Ursula, who's a horrible person.
Who actually crossed over into... is it Just Like Me, was it?
Mad About You.
Mad About You. So where's Just Like Me from?
Are you thinking of Just Shoot Me?
Yes.
You are, aren't you? Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting fact. Yeah, the character, I'm sure... Ursula appears first on Mad About You, which aired before Friends, and then when Lisa Kudrow got that role, yeah, because Mad About You aired from 92 to 99, and then Ursula was a character on there who was recurring, and then when Lisa Kudrow got the Friends gig, yeah. They decided, because there's an episode where the lead characters of Mad About You coming to Central Perk.
Is it Helen Hunt?
Helen Hunt, yeah. And I think it's season one. They actually briefly pop into Central Perk, I think looking for Ursula, or they mistake Phoebe for Ursula. And I think that might be the same one as you see George Clooney from ER, because there's a crossover with ER as well, isn't there?
Is it definitely Doug Ross?
I'm sure it's Doug Ross, or it's a variation of that.
Or it's not supposed to be the same character, but it's just a spoof of him, his role.
Maybe, but I don't know. I don't know if it's actually... It might be.
But so technically could argue that Friends is a spin-off.
Friends
is a spin-off of...
Potentially. Well, actually, no, looking at the credits, he's called Dr. Mitchell in this, George Clooney. So, but it's suggesting that there's a connection. But it's definitely in the same universe as Mad About You. Definitely. There's no question that it's definitely a spin-off of Mad About You, technically. Although not many people outside the US would remember Mad About You now, whereas everyone in the world knows Friends. So it's one of those examples of... The show that sort of came out of something that eclipsed it. The better example of that is Frasier. I think more people would remember Frasier than Cheers now, or it would be at least on a par. That's a controversial one.
I'm just wondering whether because of the fact it aired after Friends.
I think
Friends was massive over here.
Friends was enormous from the get-go, really, to the point where obviously in season four, at the end of season four, the Friends cast come to England as part of a big storyline.
Yeah.
I remember being 15, it was 1997 that was, where they come to London, and they actually filmed in London, and they had a whole raft of British stars who cropped up from Jennifer Saunders, June Whitfield, Hugh Laurie, Tom Conti, all these people who kept going,
no way.
Hugh Laurie's great, isn't he? Because do you remember he's on the plane with Rachel, and he's just... He's listening in and he's going, "I'm sorry, you're a horrible person."
it's a nice piece of like the writers self-referencing just how weird the relationship between him and Ross gone.
Yeah.
And just how superficial Rachel could be as a character.
Definitely, yeah. It's just really funny. But yeah, so the popularity ended up extending to actually physically coming to the UK because they knew it was such a big thing. I remember there was tie-in books as well, tie-in sort of guides. There was one specifically for the Friends London episodes. I had that.
And I can remember watching a couple of things. There was a famous one where Johnny Vaughan was like was the host of The Big Breakfast, which was an early, well, not early morning, it was 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning, a early morning variety show that aired daily. And so he was quite well known at the time. And for Channel 4, he famously interviewed all six of the cast individually when they were on there. But there was like a lot of, I think it was controversial at the time, because like he was promised a good sit down and he only had 10 minutes with each of them.
It was kind of rushed.
I can't remember if it was the same time, but I do remember watching an hour special where Gabby Roslin interviewed the three guys.
Yeah, that rings a bell as well.
Yeah, and I can't remember if she was actually on the set of Central Perk, or whether it was something that was made to look like it, but I do remember that as well.
God, we're digging out some old names of interviewers. This shows it was the 90s. But yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of an influence. It was a big influence. And we'll talk more about influences later. But in terms of the premise, you've got obviously these six characters intertwining. Now, is the reason that Friends has stayed in the public consciousness, is it because of several factors? Firstly, is it that it's such a simple premise and such an identifiable premise that we all kind of connect to it? Because we all have friendship groups. And one of the things I think I said to you over email when we were talking about this episode and talking about Friends is that if we look at the arc of Friends and the arc of what it does, it goes from a group of singletons in their mid-20s through to mostly people who have either got married or are having children by the time they're in their mid-30s, and they are all about to move on to different lives. The only one who really isn't doing that is Joey by the end. And then they unsuccessfully tried to do a spin-off called Joey, didn't they? Do you remember? Did you ever watch Joey?
I remember watching some of the first series, and it
was okay. It was all right.
It could have been a lot better, I think.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to do Joey on the Retro Box actually one day, because Joey was,
I think, it qualifies because it got cancelled in 2006.
It did. It got cancelled after like two episodes, so it does qualify.
Two seasons.
Sorry, yeah. That's what I mean. But so it got a good 40-odd episodes probably out of it. But the problem was, just as a quick sidebar, Joey was the straight man, and in the end, the key with Friends, and the reason that Joey's always one of the most funny characters in Friends, is he's very much the comic foil quite often. He's the dimbo, really.
Oh, yeah. That's right, you take good care of those babies.
Excuse me? It's me, Joey. Do I know you?
Joey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the hand guy.
Right, okay, so what are we going to do about this hand twin thing?
Nothing. Look, you and I have been given a gift, okay? We have to do something with it, like hand modeling, huh? Or magic. And you know NASA's going to want to talk to us.
I have to get back.
Whoa. We could have our own show. You know, we could clap our hands together. People will love it. Huh? And I wrote a song for us.
This hand is your hand. This hand is my hand. Oh, wait, that's your hand. No, wait, it's my hand.
That's okay. But you haven't even heard the chorus.
But in Joey, he had to kind of be the main guy, and in some respects, the straight man. And the wackier characters were people like his sister and other people who would come in, and it didn't quite work the same way. Joey as a lead doesn't work, and it's interesting how, if you look at it from that perspective, I don't think any of them could have survived. Joey was probably the most likely, which is why they tried.
Because he was the least developed, I think.
Because he was the least developed, in a sense, and he still had some way to go. But the rest of them couldn't have survived on their own. You couldn't have had Ross as a show. You couldn't have had Monica and Chandler raising kids, because the joke would have been stretched. Yeah. So is it that it represents a period in our lives, and we can see that the kind of thing that they go through is what we all go through?
Quite possibly, yeah, because it's when you've got, I think it's that point in your mid-20s where you've passed like the university slash college years, yeah, and you've got to start venturing out into this big wide world. Mm. We join these characters pretty much just after, a bit after that immediate period after, so they've had some time to try and settle into,
yeah,
some kind of adult life. And the touch slip paper, I think, is the fact that Rachel, she I think running that from the altar, that's like her last, I'll say it's her last major immature decision, but that's not. But in terms,
but she
of,
she begins to grow from that, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's the light, it's the blue lit paper that she, that sets off her character arc. So it, which leads her to being a slightly more mature, slightly,
yeah,
in inverted commas, and it probably has a knock on effect for the other characters as well. So so it brings her into the orbit of Ross. I think it also, I think it adds an almost older sister relationship with Monica, because Monica's always been probably the more organised, slightly eccentric,
OCD.
Almost OCD organised one, who pretty much has an unorganised friend suddenly thrust upon her, yeah, and outside stuff.
A daddy's girl, a princess, because yes, that's the thing with Rachel. They've all got very distinctive personalities, and Rachel's very much the princess, isn't she, when she comes in?
Yeah, they also, those distinctive personalities, they probably reflect a bunch of different people that you know in certain groups as well. So you've got the slightly wound up one, the carefree, immature one who probably doesn't fully realise the amount of responsibility he should have.
Absolutely.
The very career based one who doesn't really know what he wants to, who just seems perturbed at all the time.
Yeah.
You've got the overly organised one who seems to have taken it all too seriously. You've got the really tightly wound.
Yeah.
I've already said that. I've already said.
Yeah, I think you have. Yeah. Yeah.
Then you've got the daddy's princess who perhaps hasn't really set out on her own, trying to set out on her own. And you've got the really crazy, carefree one who's still lacking direction and still trying to find it. In
Definitely.
Terms of Phoebe and stuff.
We all know variations of these people, don't we? And if you break them down even further, what they all go through is, the whole thing is that the essential main story is the Ross and Rachel romance, which starts from, because obviously quite a few of them knew each other back in the day, and the show does actually retcon a bit to do this later on. It kind of has things like how Chandler copped off with Rachel back when they were in high school, yet at the very beginning of the show, it's almost like they'd never met before.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain things, as I was watching it, I was going, hang on, they would remember this. One other thing I realised was that the amount of things that come out over the 10 years that none of them knew about each other, you'd think, in terms of our circle of friends, we would know that already.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sometimes it's a revelation that, oh my God, really? You did this? Or you were that? The only time it works is, it works with Phoebe, because Phoebe's got this genuinely, intentionally mysterious past.
Yeah.
Part of which could be complete fantasy, and probably often is complete fantasy, because she's an eccentric.
Yeah.
But it works with her, because, you know, she's kind of that outsider figure. And there's that beautiful theory, isn't there? You must have heard this theory.
Yeah, she doesn't actually know him.
Yeah, that it's all in her mind. Yeah. It's never actually like been in the show, but it's a lovely theory someone had, of what if it was all just Phoebe in the corner of Central Perk playing her crappy guitar, looking at these five people who she wants to be friends with and imagining her life. And then the final episode is the very end, is Phoebe just watching them all go, never knew them.
Yeah.
I would have been like, blimey, that's brave. Imagine that.
Definitely, yeah.
Because there's an argument that she's severely mentally ill to some extent. That she's suffered extreme abuse that they all just laugh off. And there's some, if you break them down, they've all got some fascinating things to them.
Yeah.
The fact that Phoebe potentially is a serious abuse victim who had her mother killed herself, her dad abandoned her, she was a prostitute. She's done everything that could have happened. She lived on the street, she was a mugger, everything. That's why she's bonkers, because she probably needs a lot of therapy, really. Yeah. And then you've got Ross, who is ultimately has a nervous breakdown throughout the entire series, really. For comic effect.
Yes.
But he goes from a man who thought he had his life cracked at the beginning. He was married, he had a child, finds out his wife's a lesbian. And then it all falls apart.
Yeah.
And then he starts to rebuild that. And then that again starts to fall apart because he has failed marriages and he goes through a genuine nervous breakdown, effectively, and then comes out the other side of it. And it's just interesting how these things happen over the 10 years. And you can relate to it because you see it with your friends. Looking at our friendships, and we're part of the same friendship group. We've known these people for nearly 10 years, longer in some cases. Can you see a connection and a parallel to our friendship group and how it's evolved to the Friends friendship group and how that evolved.
Yeah, well, you've got individual personalities within certain friendship groups.
Yeah.
And people change throughout the years. I've known, like, I've known you for nearly, what, 10 years?
In the flesh.
Yeah. In the flesh, yeah, in
longer,
the flesh.
Longer beforehand.
Yeah, and like you've
from
changed.
From our sex
yeah.
cam days back in the mid-2000s when we used to do live sex cams.
You gave up.
Oh, sorry, yeah, we're not supposed to talk about
that. Who's on the other end?
Luscious Latham, as you...
who's been on the other end?
Well, that's the question.
If it's you, can you please let us know?
Please email the Retro Box. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Please email the Retro Box. I watched Luscious Latham.
There's a hashtag.
Yeah.
Luscious Latham.
Hashtag Luscious. But yeah, people and circumstances have changed or have developed as characters. Well, not developed as characters, but developed as people. Other people have come and gone in our friendship orbit, and people that we know, there are people that we know now. Now.
Yeah.
That we didn't know 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, in a way, it's the friendship groups both shrunk and grew. The only thing I think that's slightly different is that I think that people's social orbits kind of change.
Yeah.
And friends always had that tight-knit six, and it never really... I think in a realistic world, there'll probably be neither more people going... And the things are... And people drift away. And
but then
and the argument
it,
being is that by the end of the last episode is that some of them do drift away
from
each other.
In a way, it has that for spells. I mean, you could say that Monica and Richard was part of their orbit for a while, and he hung out with them a bit. Obviously, because he was older, it didn't last and everything. You could say similar for people like... People who didn't last very long, though. That was the thing on Friends. It was looking at IMDb was interesting, because IMDb lists the amount of times people have appeared on the show.
The episodes, yeah.
And it was amazing to think of how little some of these people you remember appeared. That's why they made such an impression. Like, Monica and Ross's parents were in probably about 20 episodes of the 200-odd. Janice probably appeared about 15 times.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And you think, well, surely they were in more than that. But no, they would appear like maybe once or twice a season.
No, the Janice, I think because Janice is one of those characters that everyone kind of, inverted commas, hates, but pretty much loves as a foil.
But you love to see her.
Yeah.
Because you know when you hear her go, Chandler Bing! Immediately you're like, oh, brilliant.
Because she appears in the last season after a break of several years. She's not in it for a while, is she?
She crops up towards the end when she's having a baby, and that's when Rachel's having a baby, and she's in there. And then she comes in towards the end when... Yeah, she always pops up when Chandler and Monica are going to buy a house and she's buying the house next door.
Yeah.
And it's things like that. And then there's a great one. One of my favourites is where we don't see her, but we hear her on a romantic tape that Chandler's made for Monica, and he's taped over Janice. And she's on the tape going, Chandler! And all this. And in the middle of that, you don't see her, but you just hear her voice. So she's one of those who just crops up at the worst possible time.
Well, and certainly, I thought she would have been in it a lot more. No.
Exactly, but they leave that impression. So the thing is with Friends, the people who did crop up occasionally to be boyfriends or girlfriends, they didn't really stick around. So in real life, they probably would have lasted longer and become part of that group. Janice obviously was not liked by most of them and was annoying. But then we've had that. There have been girlfriends or boyfriends of people in our friendship circle who we've not liked, let's be honest. And we're like, fucking hell. But no, you do. That happens. And it's very true that Friends does that. And then, like you say, by the end, they all start to go their separate ways.
I think with that, it kind of happens all at once, whereas I think with real life, people drift or they move away. I mean, the most they still in contact, and probably a lot more than usual, but still, they've moved away. But
would social media have changed all this? I mean, this was before the age of... We were just getting mobile phones... You don't see him very often using those, though, even in Friends. But this was long before the
social media. Yeah, social media and WhatsApp groups and everything.
Didn't exist. MySpace was just coming online, I think, when Friends finished. 2004-ish. Was it just before MySpace?
Facebook was 2004, but that was when it was just for Harvard students.
Yeah, it was just college. 2007 when it went global.
I think it was more than that. I remember signing up for it originally in 2006. It was 2006, the end of the December 2006, I joined originally. Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. So, It was before any of that, before they, social media didn't really kick in probably till about 2010, as we know it now, realistically. That's when it started to really... This decade, it slalomed into this complete beast. Before then, it was getting there. But Friends was before any of that. So would it have been different? Would they have... Would that communication between them have been different? Would they have gone their separate ways?
It's one of those weird things about how would that format work in a modern day.
Mm.
I mean, in terms of the TV show itself, if it was done today, it's another subject altogether. But in terms of modern technology, possibly it might have been easy to connect with people. I can remember reading something about the final episode, and there's like a symbolic... There's always been like a symbolic thing with romantic comedies in terms of once they get on a plane, they're gone forever.
Yeah.
And that's probably why in the 80s or the 90s, you'll always have romantic comedies where the hero slash heroine is running through airport security. Don't go on that plane. We'll never speak again if you do that again. And quite a few times that's been used as a trope in Friends, where like the plane and the not baggage claim, what's it called?
Arrivals.
That's been used quite a point, and it's even used as a plot device in the finale as well.
In the last one, yeah.
Yeah, when they try and run out and they go to the wrong airport. And
yeah, and Ross is desperately trying to reach Rachel.
Yeah.
And it was even going back to the first season, wasn't it? When Rachel turns up at the airport because she realises that she likes Ross and he's brought back a new girlfriend.
And that's a shock for everyone. Now, when Monday, you'd probably have suddenly, Rachel will probably just like her down. Flicking through Facebook and goes, Roscoe, like, in a relationship with her name?
Julie.
Julie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it wouldn't have been the complete shocker. So it would
But all you need to do is find a Wi-Fi connection and go, hey, Monica, sister, I met someone, pictures.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be very different in the sense, there's a certain element of, and this gets onto the retro thing, that timeless, that very time-specific time that Friends existed. You know, it does have that very 90s feel quite often.
Yeah.
And even when you get into the 2000s, they just look older, you know. And you do have to compare. It's interesting, you mentioned before we recorded about how the titles change. Because obviously the titles have them all dancing around a waterfall.
But that bit's always the only thing that remains constant.
That's the only thing that remains constant when they're young. But then all through the series, you see the clips from recent episodes change. So by the time we get to season 10, when you look at them when they're on the fountain and where they are now, it's like, wow, they really have aged. And I think one of the things Friends did really well was that you saw that aging. You felt them get older. You felt their dynamic didn't change, but some of their interrelationships did. Like, for instance, obviously, Chandler and Monica become an item. And Scott Silveri, one of the executive producers, there was an interview, really interesting one recently, where he said that relationship gave us 3 more years.
It's surprising how much that revitalised the show.
It was in danger. It would have been in danger after about season 5 was when that started. End of season 4 into season 5. And that was the point where Ross and Rachel had reached a point where you
it was starting to drag a bit.
Yeah, you know. And then you had, luckily, the Monica and Chandler thing to carry us through while Ross is having his breakdown. After his life collapses.
Yeah.
You've got that. And season 5 and a lot of season 6 and a lot of season 7 is pretty much Chandler and Monica as the central arc.
Yeah.
The Ross and Rachel thing, there's a pin put in that a lot of the time in the last half of the show's run. It's only really in the last season or so, season or two, that is kicked in more.
Oh, you're going?
I'm not without you, lover. So, this is my bra.
It's very, very nice. Well, come here. I'm very happy we're going to have all the sex.
You should be. I'm very bendy. I'm going to kiss you now.
Not if I kiss you first. I guess there's nothing left for us to do but kiss.
Here it comes. Our first kiss?
You win. I can't have sex with you.
And why not?
Because I'm in love with Monica.
You're what?
Love her. That's right. I love her. I love her. I love you, Monica.
I love you too, Chandler. We're doing it. I didn't know you were in love.
Dude. And hats off to Phoebe. Quite a competitor. And may I say, your breasts are still showing.
God.
All right. So that's it. It's over. Everybody knows.
Well, actually, Ross doesn't.
Yes, and we'd appreciate if no one told him yet.
Then you've got other interrelationships like Joey and Rachel, which is the big one at the end. Joey, through the show.
That's one of the more controversial stuff, which...
Well, it's interesting because I think it works to an extent. You know, Joey all through the series has been a love 'em and leave 'em charmer, you know. Although, as many people have said, there's no...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Way he would have pulled all the women he did with the lines he came up with. You know, and everything. But... Joey and Rachel, I think there's, what they realised was there's a genuine chemistry between Matt LeBlanc and Jennifer Aniston in a different way that she had with David Schwimmer.
Yes.
And I think they saw that there was something there. Joey and Rachel, before that, you could tell... And this is another thing. You can tell when the writers are noticing things. You could tell that they saw the dynamic between Courtney Cox and Matthew Perry. And they then started writing more Monica and Chandler stuff. And in the end,
you've watched them over the... How long has it
I started taken? Rewatching them, and I'd never seen the last three or four seasons, ever.
But knowing what happens...
I watched them from November till the start of February.
So, knowing what happens in the future with, like, Monica and Chandler... I think I must have asked you this before we did this. Can you see any subtle... layering or
definitely
in terms of Monica and Chandler or
definitely
in retrospect where you might not have noticed it the first time.
Absolutely. Because
the only one I can think of is the one with the jellyfish sting.
The jellyfish is a big one. Yeah. The whole thing of peanut and they make a comment about would you sting me if I was we were together. But before then there's a scene in the hospital when Ross's lesbian ex-wife is giving birth. They're all at the hospital. It's the end of season one, I think. And there's a scene where Monica is saying, oh, nobody wants to be with me. And she's lamenting everything. And Chandler says, I would. I'd sleep with you. And they have, and he gives her a hug. And there's a few moments where it's very, they're quite seldom until season four. But there's some moments where you see that there's possibility. And I think they clocked onto that relatively quickly. And then they eventually went, Ross and Rachel is starting to fade.
Yeah.
Let's give it something else. And then I think, again, with Joey and Rachel, I think they saw... something in the actors, some kind of bat. And Joey and Rachel had a lot of stuff that was funny, and they started giving them more to do, and it worked. It worked really well, because Ross was off doing other things, Chandler was off doing other things, and they built that in, and then they knew ultimately that Ross and Rachel were meant to be, and that was the great romance of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people wouldn't have accepted Ross and Joey and Rachel being the one who ended up together.
Yeah. Might have been a riot in the street.
Yeah,
50 million people.
What?
52 million people descending on Rockefeller Plaza.
Yeah.
It was NBC, wasn't it?
NBC, yeah.
Rockefeller Plaza going, where are you?
Because it was the big romance of TV, wasn't it, in the 90s? Yeah. Ross and Rachel was huge. It was the big ship, as they call it. The big ship of the 90s.
And also, because they both start with the same name, it's really hard to create one of those stupid shipper names.
Yeah, like... Race. Ross or Rothschild. Yeah, right, that doesn't work.
Yeah, Rothschild.
Yeah, Rothschild. Manler. With Ray Stevens.
Chonica. Chonica.
It would have worked. It would have worked with Ross and Joey and Rachel. You could have had Jachel. That would have worked.
Or Rowie.
Like a fish. But yeah, so they had to give that ending the way they did. And but I think the dynamics evolved between some of them, and I think it worked. Chandra and Monica become a really good couple. Although what I think that does, ironically, it makes Chandler less funny. In the last half of the show's life, from once he's with Monica, he becomes the straight man in the show. It's Ross who then becomes the best character in Friends. He, for the first like 3 or 4 seasons, he's really annoying quite often, and he's very prissy, and you know, he's lovelorn or whatever. When they turn him into a nervous wreck, and then he starts to basically have all the and the ongoing jokes of how many women have you married and all this kind of stuff, and he gets more angry at little things like somebody eating his sandwich or or he starts flirting with women, which is some of the funniest things in Friends. He becomes hilarious, and he becomes the one that they play up the farce with. They do lots of physical comedy with David Schwimmer and Matthew Perry, who was the funny one. Chandler was always the funny one.
Yeah.
And it's not to the detriment of him, because there needs to be a straight man, but it shifts, it changes, it evolves. And I think what they did well was the characters change. They do change. Mm-hmm. And they get to a point where by the end you believe them. And I think by the end, I thought the last episode was very, very, very good, because it didn't try and show off too much. It didn't try and bring back tons of people.
Yes.
It didn't try and be 2 hours long. It didn't be... It was just... It's the end. They're all going their separate ways. Mm-hmm. What did you make of it? Did you think the ending was...
I think the ending works in terms of symbolically ending the show, in terms of making it look like it was final. And it did that in quite a few clever ways. If you ignore the... like as I said before, the airport, the attempted drama. Attempted tension in inverted commas. You have a lot of symbolic stuff, like the fact where they disassemble the... Well, let's disassemble, hack into the foosball table.
Yes.
It's been there for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
The big symbolic gesture is the fact when the whole apartment's empty, and when they say, hand your keys in, all six of them have got keys to the apartment. And it's things like that, which is more a visual idea that this is ending.
That this is over.
That quite a few shows forget to do
in
terms of when they're trying to finish. So.
Definitely. I think it did that really well, and it gave you what you wanted, I think. And it moved everything on. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was good payoff for a show that I think was consistently good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the things we talked about before was having lists of best or worst episodes. And it's very difficult with Friends to actually come up with worsts. Even bests, really, because they have a general sort of consistency with them. In that even if there's an episode that has a plotline that isn't as good, there's always something else quite often that's funny. So when I was choosing elements, I went for things like... For instance, the one where Chandler crosses the line, which is in the middle of the arc in season 4 where he sleeps with Joey's girlfriend, Kathy. Mm-hmm. But what was funny in that was Ross's music, right? You know, the keyboard stuff.
Yes.
Dum, 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 wah, wah. And then, pew, 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 pew. And then he goes... It's little things like that.
Yeah, it's the way that the episodes are structured is, I think people can't recall certain episodes, but they will remember moments and bits or key lines, and there are loads and loads of moments.
There's tons.
But there's also ongoing storylines where people say, oh, I like the one where so-and-so and so-and-so happened.
Yeah,
and it was probably a B or C plot.
Yeah, definitely.
And you say, well, so what happened? What else happened in that episode in terms of the A plot? And they probably wouldn't be able to
tell you. It's very difficult to remember sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, and I think in terms of actual episodes, trying to think... I can think of... I got 2 single episodes. Because you said to me, I want you to have 5 best and 5 worst.
Which was a difficult ask, because I don't have 5 worst.
Yeah, and it's one of those few series where... Because it's actually a lot more serialised than you think it is.
Yeah, quite often, yeah.
And the way it's structured is that even some of... There's always probably at least something in each episode that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Or at least one plot line that's quite good to watch.
Definitely.
Which cancels out some perhaps less interesting ones. The two that I have... are the one where everybody finds out, which is a bottle episode.
Yes, that's very good.
A bottle episode.
Yeah.
Woo,
high five. Yeah.
Which is actually very well done. It's very and it's all done in real time, and it's when Ross has that speech he wants to give, and everyone's trying to get ready, and there's that great stuff. There's the ongoing bit with Monica on Richard's phone, and the bit with the hummus on Phoebe's dress, and the best part is the whole Joey and Chandler, where they're on about wearing everyone's clothes. Joey comes in, "I'm wearing everything you own! And I'm going commando and starts doing squats."
Is that the one at the end where Ross sees them in the window having sex?
No,
and he goes, "Get off my sister!" Like that. Is that another one?
No, that's because that's season 5. This is season 3. This is like the second episode of season 3.
Oh, okay, I see.
Because there's a bit... Because what it is, the end of that episode is actually separate. Because it's actually at the garden. There's a whole thing about Joey and Chandler sitting on the same seat and nicking each other's seat.
Yeah.
And then there's like this massive guest that like Ross is trying to impress that sits in Chandler's seat.
That's it.
And then Chandler's like, you're in my seat.
Yeah.
And the other one is, I think that you've got this one, and I think it's the right one, is the one with the embryos.
Definitely. That's the one. If I had to pick an episode that I think is brilliant throughout consistently, it's that one.
Because it leads to perhaps one of the funniest arcs.
Yeah.
In which, and cause if you're unaware, I have to... As soon as we mention the fact that it's the one with the game where the boys win, where the lads win the chance to move into the...
Which is essentially the B-plot. And that's the thing.
Yeah,
the embryos is the bigger story of Phoebe and the triplets and giving birth to her brother's kids.
Yes.
Which is as creepy as it sounds. But yeah, so yeah, exactly.
And it has some of my favourite moments. Like the one that I always remember is the one where he goes, "What's the name on the TV guide each week? Chandler Bing! Wrong.
Chenangla Bong."
He goes, "That's Miss Chenangla Bong." And it's just Matthew Perry's pride in that.
Yeah.
He goes, "It's Miss Chenangla Bong." And that smile afterwards, and it's just so hilarious.
Great.
All right, the score is 9-8 in favor of the guys. Ladies, if you miss this, the game is theirs. Pick your category.
It's all relative!
You don't have to shout everything. What is the name of Chandler's father's Las Vegas all-male burlesque?
Viva Las Vegas!
Unfortunately, that is correct.
Yes!
All right, we have a tie. Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round! Seconds, all the questions you can answer.
You guys are dead. I am so good at lightning rounds.
I majored in lightning rounds. All right, we're gonna destroy you.
I want to bet.
I'm so confused as to what we've been doing so far.
How about we play for more money? Say $150.
$150. Say $200. $200.
You're doing it again.
Excuse me.
Monica, I don't want to lose $200.
We won't.
Okay.
$300.
Monica,
I'm just trying to spice it up.
Okay, so then play for some pepper. Stop spending my money.
I got it. How about if we win, they have to get rid of the rooster. Ooh, that's interesting.
Hey, no way. That rooster's family.
Throw in the duck too.
What do you have against the duck? It doesn't make any noise.
Well, he gets the other one all riled up.
We are not...
Right, hold on!
If you win, we give up the bird.
Gah!
But if we win, we get your apartment.
Ooh!
Deal!
It's the bit at the very end of the episode where like Monica and Rachel come in, "This apartment's horrible," and then like cuts to over the road, and it's like Chandler comes in, "Oh my god, I've just seen the closet space, I love this apartment."
And then finally they've got their chairs and the lazy boys, and just go, oh, they're in their Uber.
Yeah, but
it's a great arc. Yeah. It lasts a good few episodes, doesn't
it? But then
again,
in the flat. As much as that episode, that moment in the episode is great, the next couple of episodes where the girl's trying to get the apartment back,
yeah,
it's still it's still over a certain amount of episodes.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to encapsulate those certain things in episodes as well.
It's so true.
For example, I love the bit. I can't remember what season it is, but there's when Joey turns up to get a regular acting job on Days of Our Lives as Dr. Drake Ramore.
Yeah,
but I can't remember what season that is.
I think he first becomes Drake Ramore in season two, and then he gets killed off he gets pushed down an elevator shaft.
Is that like season three? Or is that
something like that? And then he eventually comes back as his twin brother or something, like later on in the series, like season seven or something. But yeah. I'm sure Drake Ramore, season two.
Yeah, because he mentioned something about leaking plot lines or something.
Yeah.
And then you just see a hand going, we'll see about that.
Yeah, the writer, yeah.
And his death scene's there going, you sure no one else wants to go with me?
And he's like, whoa! Falls down the shaft.
Yeah,
and they're all watching it on TV, aren't they? And they go, did they just kill Joey?
Yeah. He doesn't tell him, does he?
No, he doesn't tell him because he's ashamed, and he's making a good
because the audience because the audience knows that, if I remember, the audience knows he's going to be killed off, but doesn't tell anyone. Does
exactly,
he?
Yeah. We know, but they don't, and that's
because and then he leads. There's also in that bit. There's the one where it's not that bit. I think it's before he gets killed off, or it might be afterwards. When I can't remember who the celebrity guest is, but there's this crazy stalker that he goes on a date with who thinks that he's Drake Ramore.
Oh, it's Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields.
That's a good episode.
I was going
to
say Brooke Shields, but I wasn't sure.
Because she thinks he's really Drake. Because she thinks he's really Drake, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
because
really
she's hot, he goes along with it to try and sleep with her.
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, I think it's quite early on in the first season as well, which is, I think, one of the first real hilarious moments is the Chandler getting stuck in the ATM. With the Victoria's Secret model.
Jill Goodyear.
I'm stuck in a vestibule with Jill Goodyear.
He doesn't know it. He needs to know where to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember if it's like everyone's going, who's so and so, and then like Joey, is it Joey and Ross going?
Yeah. They're like, what? There's also a lot of thinking of that. There's also a lot of well-known people who crop up in Friends, aren't there?
Yes.
Can you think of any off the top of your head? There's a list, but can you think of anyone who crops up? Because they sometimes have arcs. They sometimes appear more than once.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, who plays he plays someone who Monica...
Monica and Rachel try and fight over, don't they?
Rachel, that was it. No, it's someone who Rachel tormented when he was a geek. And he's one of Ross's old buddies.
Yes.
And he's turned out to be really hot when he's older.
Well,
they were together at the time, they were married or something.
So there's a lot of, like, intersexual humour of him.
Yeah,
taking,
definitely. Yeah, yeah, which is really good.
And it's quite fun to see him, like, interplaying.
Because Brad Pitt hates her. And yes. She has no idea.
Yeah.
That's a really funny one.
Then there's, I think it's George Clooney and, was it Noah Wyle?
I don't think.
No, or was it Anthony Edwards?
Anthony Edwards. I think it might be Anthony Edwards, possibly.
Yeah, they show up. Tom Selleck shows up.
Tom Selleck, who's got a major role in it, really. For
Dustin,
a while.
Does Dustin Hoffman play himself in the Outbreak sequel when Marcel returns? That Joey, because I remember that one, because Marcel returns, because there's a two-parter, and I think it's the same one with Brad Pitt in it, where Marcel returns, and he's playing the monkey in Outbreak, and then Joey's got this stint as he's playing a dying patient, and he can't say his lines properly. So he's there going... and then it cuts to the very end, where they just cut him out and say, this patient is dead.
I don't know. He's not on my list.
Because Dustin Hoffman was in Outbreak.
He was in Outbreak, but I don't know if he's in this. No, you're thinking. Aren't you thinking of Jean-Claude Van Damme at the end?
Jean-Claude, yes.
Get to see what's going on here. This man is dying.
Yes. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
There's Jean-Claude Van Damme. So he's
Christine Turner play. Is it Christine Turner?
Kathleen Turner.
Christine. Is it Christine? No, what's her name? Ben Stiller's wife.
Oh, Christine.
Hunter, no.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, who shaves the head?
Yeah.
She's in his...
Christine, I can't remember. I know what you mean.
Yeah, but she's married to Ben Stiller.
Yeah, it might be Christine Turner, actually.
But there's Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner, who plays Chandler's mom. Chandler's dad.
Yeah.
She's really good.
Yeah.
There's a great scene. There's a great scene with her and Morgan Fairchild, who plays Chandler's mom. Which is really sort of bitchy, and it's just funny. It's just really good. Who played Rachel's sisters? Because we see two of her sisters.
Oh, bloody hell.
Can you remember?
I can't remember them at all.
Right, one was Reese Witherspoon, and one was...
Winona Ryder?
No, she was in it. She plays a woman
who... I'm pretty sure everyone had been in Friends.
Well, yeah. Winona Ryder's in it, because she plays an old friend of Rachel's who's always been in love with Rachel.
Yes.
And then tries to kiss her, and Rachel's like, ah! Like that. The other sister was Christina Applegate, and she's very good.
Yes.
She's horrible in it. She's horrible. She just plays an absolute horrible person.
That's an interesting cast of sisters, I seem to think of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was Noah Wyle from ER, not Anthony Edwards.
The thing is, everything's just probably gone out of my head at the moment. There's loads.
It's Billy Crystal and Robin Williams.
Yes.
Who crop up in just a quick cameo in the Ultimate Fighting Champion. Okay. Gary Oldman, who appears...
Yes. Is he the police officer that Phoebe finds the badge of?
No, that's Michael Rapaport.
That's it.
Gary Oldman's in a movie with Joey, and he keeps spitting on him. He's in this war movie at the end.
He's playing himself,
he's playing an actor who's... Like Gary Oldman, famous, but he's playing an actor who just spits because he's into the role. Yeah. And he's a proper dramatic guy, and Joey just doesn't want to give up the shot, so he starts spitting in his face, and he's like, "What are you doing?" It's very funny. So he's good. Alec Baldwin, who's this, his appearance is brilliant because he's in two of them. He plays someone who dates Phoebe, and he's just really enthusiastic about everything.
Yes.
And he just comes in going, "Isn't it a lovely day?" And they end up going, "Oh my God, he's too much." He's brilliant. Freddie Prinze Jr.
plays the nanny,
Ross doesn't like because he's too nice and sensitive. Christine Taylor.
That's it.
Christine Taylor. We were close.
She's still married to Ben Stiller.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Susan Sarandon, who was...
Oh, she...
Who was in the episode where Joey gets the brain of her character when she's dying.
Yes.
She's going to die and Joey's going to get her brain. That's brilliant.
For the uninitiated, Tony's about to go into some kind of fit.
That's just one of my favourite episodes. Jeff Goldblum, who memorably appears in season 9 as a method actor.
I can't remember.
In a really good episode where Joey goes for this audition, and Jeff Goldblum's this director-actor, not playing himself, but playing an actor. And Joey, at first, does an audition well, and then when he comes back, he needs a piss badly, and he's jigging about on the spot. He's going, "Just get through the scene!" And they mistake it for real passion. So he gives him the part, based on the fact Joey needed a piss. It's so funny. Jeff Goldblum's proper Jeff Goldblum-like. Charlie Sheen appears as well. He's like a long-lost lover of Phoebe's. John Favreau is in quite a few episodes. John Lovitz from National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon, who appears brilliantly in in a guy who he's set up on a blind date with Rachel.
I've just remembered one of my favourite bits of the show is the one with Isabella Rossellini.
And the list,
we'll probably talk about the impact in a second, Legacy of Friends, but
we will
that scene, the five list as well, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the bit where like he goes, where him and Rachel are trying to figure out that list, and Isabella Rosalini's on his office. And then suddenly she appears in Central Perk. He goes, "I'm not on this list. It's a draft. It's laminated."
Yeah. John Lovitz though is brilliant because he plays a guy that Rachel set up on a blind date with, and he hates himself and how he looks, and he's just the worst blind date in the world. He's brilliant. Julia Roberts, who gets one over on Chandler, if you remember memorably, she's the girl who he was at school with, who he taunted, and she pretends to be all into him and sexy, and they have this sex, and then she leaves him abandoned naked in a toilet.
Yes.
Which is really funny. Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Who plays, actually, the character in what, retrospectively, is a bit of a skeevy plotline. He's the dad of the university student who Ross dates. Now, I kind of feel that in this day and age, I don't like that plot. I was looking at that plot line going, this isn't good. This does not paint Ross in a good light.
No.
And Bruce Willis appears in that role. And he turns out to be, at first he's this macho guy, and then he's very sort of, he's just broken.
I think I remember, because he breaks down, isn't he?
He just breaks down at the end and cries.
Is it when he cries on his lap?
Yeah.
I remember, yeah.
So he sends himself up quite well there. Sean Penn, who plays...
Yes.
Ursula's fiance, who Phoebe, she's in it a few episodes.
Giovanni Ribisi.
Giovanni Ribisi's
Phoebe's
Frank Jr. Yeah, Phoebe's brother.
Yeah.
My favourite of all the appearances, and I don't know if you've seen this one, but without question, and it was a surprise, my favourite is Danny DeVito.
I don't remember that one.
He plays a stripper, and I won't say any more. but you just need to watch the one where the stripper cries. Okay?
Is that the name of the show?
That's the name of the episode. I think it's season 10, because it's very late on, because it's Phoebe's bachelorette party.
This is when Danny DeVito's bigger and...
This is when he's old. This is like him in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, almost. It's just brilliant. It is brilliant. Just go and watch that. So there's loads of really famous people who appeared in Friends.
Do you think there's a town in Missouri or someplace called Sample? And as you're driving into the town, there's like a sign and it says, "You're in Sample."
Hey!
How did it go with Pete?
All right, tell us.
You're not going to believe this, okay? So I go over there.
Excuse us.
It's a little crowded. Do you mind if we sit?
Yeah, could you scooch?
Oh, move over just a little bit.
Thank you. Keep on scooching.
So, guys, listen. I go over there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
why is wrong with me?
What's the matter?
Tim, I have a feeling my wife... He's sleeping with her gynecologist.
How do you know?
Well, you know, he's got access. You know, it's a feeling you get, you know?
Like when you go bowling and you know you're in somebody else's shoes?
That's the one.
So you went to Pete's.
What happened?
Something, you know, why is this happening to me? I don't know, maybe it's my wound.
Forget it.
It's not healed yet.
You know, it's oozing. It's oozing. Did you pass the cream? Is anything? Oh, there's a cream.
Thomas, this is going to be hard, but I wanted it to come from me and nobody else.
What is it, Tim?
It's me. I've been sleeping with your wife.
So you're the gynecologist?
Hey, I'm trying to have a private conversation right now.
Oh, can I have it next? Could you please have it next? Give me this thing, all right? You want this thing, all right? Enough! And you are no longer my friend. We are finished. Naya, no more. You are a bastard for doing that. Stay away from me.
Come back.
So, Monica, what were you going to tell us? I have no idea.
In terms of its legacy and where the cast went, though, finally, what do you think Friends has spawned? I mean, if you look back, it's been 12 years since it ended. TV has changed.
The nature of comedies, I think, they start mixing around with different formats. I can't think of a sitcom as big as Friends that wasn't focused on either workplace or a family unit.
Yeah.
And I think Friends might have been one of the first sitcoms that was predominantly not about a workplace or about a family. So you got like Family Ties, Full House. MASH was workplace when you think about it.
Korea.
It was about some nondescript war.
Yeah, that one of them.
Yeah, that lasted a lot less time than the show ran.
Yeah.
So I think it might be Korea.
I think it was Korea. Actually.
But that was workplace. Taxi was workplace. Cheers might have, but then again, that might have been a workplace because it was about
the bar, wasn't it, really? Yeah,
that was workplace and the regulars around the workplace. Frasier's a family unit.
But that's got an element of workplace, though, hasn't it? Because he's the psychiatrist, and a lot of one of Frasier's main sets is Frasier's radio station.
Pretty much three of the five main cast are related.
True.
Fourth lives with them.
Yeah.
And the fifth is only the producer who gets mixed in with
It's
more of a family one.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the sitcoms I enjoyed as a kid, a more kid-based one. Sister was... like family based.
Yeah.
Kin and Kel, the majority of the cast was family based as well, but it was more about the friendship, but it was a lot more based on Kel's impact on Kin's family. Mm. Boy Meets World, again, Boy Meets World, a lot of the cast was Corey Matthews' family, but it was more about the relationship between him and his teacher.
Mm.
But then again, that was classed as that'd be workplace and family. Whereas Friends, I really struggle to think of anything before Friends. Because when you start thinking about stuff after Friends, How I Met Your Mother, Will and Grace was probably the first friend, was the first...
Similar kind of thing.
Yeah, that did really well. Because they probably copied a load of stuff off Friends.
How I Met Your Mother is definitely its spiritual sequel.
Yeah, it
definitely.
But How You Met Mother goes into some. It doesn't end well.
Well, no, I know. Yeah. And I would argue, I've only just started it really, but I would argue it's not nearly as funny immediately as well. And, you know, yeah. it's still good, but Friends, I don't think there's anything quite like Friends since, has there? It's had a lot of, like, legacy and imitators.
A lot of sitcoms, I think, because if there's anything there that's not focused on a family and it's more focused on a friendship group of late 20s, early 30s, it's automatically assumed to be Friends, and there's usually six characters. The British sitcom Coupling, which is one of my favourite, I love that show. It's one of the best British sitcoms ever made.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, actually.
It's always called The British Friends, which is
very unfair, because it's really not.
It's a lot cleverer than Friends. It's a lot more intelligent than Friends in terms of how the story is structured and how it's written.
Yeah.
Probably not as lasting impact. But because it's about three women, three guys.
Friends was not... It wasn't dumb comedy, but at the same time, it wasn't... And it wasn't lowest common denominator, either.
No.
But Friends was very...
Broad.
Broad, and it was also very accessible.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't rude.
But then, actually,
it was a lot ruder than you think. Friends was a lot ruder. Almost every episode, porn is mentioned. Guaranteed. We were noticing this.
Oh, I just remembered.
Porn again.
Oh, hang on, another episode.
There's a lot of dirty jokes you don't get as a kid in Friends.
I just remembered one of my other favourite episodes. I think it's a B-plot where they find free porn in Rachel and Monica's...
Yeah, the free porn, and
to keep it, they pretty much forbid them from turning it off. So there's
porn all the time on the
screen. And then there's a great line where, like... Rachel's like humming something, goes, "What is that?" And then Joey's like, "Oh, that's the theme from Good Will Humping." But then it's what I think is benefit to it is that it's very easily paced. The writing's really sharp.
Yeah, it is.
Writing is real. And considering how a lot of US sitcoms is a bunch of people in one room throwing out jokes.
Yeah.
At once, rather than one person, like the British model, where the right one person kind of builds the fun.
Yeah,
it works really well. It's very accessible. You could probably cut into an episode halfway through and still enjoy it, even though you're in the first stop.
Yeah, again, accessible. That's as I say.
Yeah, it's very fast paced, so nothing drags. Mm. The characters are quite likable as well, and the cast is spot on.
You can't imagine them being played by anybody else, can you?
No, that ingrained. All you need to do is just mention the first names of the characters and you know who they are.
Yeah, exactly. They're very synonymous.
That's how well-known they are in terms of legacy.
And obviously, you know, all the actors went on to do different things. They went on various successes. You know, the most successful one is Jennifer Aniston, you know, who went on to do a lot of shitty romantic comedy. And there's occasionally, she's tried lately to be a bit more... dramatic, but it's not quite worked yet. You know, she's gone on and done a lot more. Matt LeBlanc has done the odd thing. He's done episodes,
that's been nominated for Emmys,
which is underrated and underseen, probably. Actually,
I think, yeah, but it's been going, it's still going on,
it's still going on, and now he's doing Top Gear, which is strange.
But then again, he's still. I think because Matt LeBlanc is a massive petrol head.
Yeah.
And
Joey's new Porsche was a good example of that.
Yeah, but like I think Matt LeBlanc as well is still the fastest star in the reasonably priced car.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so he still holds that record. And I think he's one of these massive, massive car buffs. So
it makes sense.
Yeah, and he's hosted the US spin-offs of the UK one before anyway.
Yeah.
So...
So he's done that. You've got David Trimmer, who's gone on to direct certain things and has popped up in various different
stuff. I really want him to be in... Cause I've not seen OJ versus...
Yes, he's in that, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a Kardashian.
He's a Kardashian, yeah. He's the Kardashian dad, I think, isn't he? Which is really interesting. He's gone on to do various things.
I want to see him in front of the camera a lot more.
Yeah, I know.
Because he was in Band of Brothers and he pretty much stole the first steps. He was brilliant.
David Trimmer's the one who... I would argue David Trimmer's the best actor of the six because, as I said, Ross transforms from being a whiny, annoying character into one of the funniest comic characters I've ever seen.
I can't,
and that's down to David Trimmer.
I think as well, I can't remember if this is true or not, but I'm pretty sure I remember, because I know David Schwimmer has a live theatre background, and I think he's done a lot of improvisational comedy, and a lot of physical comedy anyway.
Yeah.
I think he was the only one who had that background.
It would make sense.
And I've seen people talk about David Schwimmer in that he's very technically minded, so he will know, he will think about comic timing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the physical comedy comes from David Schwimmer anyway.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and he's very... And
certainly in the later few years of the show.
But yeah, I think he's the more easiest one to...
He understands the technique, which makes sense.
And he works for the character as well, to be honest. He's the one most likely to get caught up in a load of physical stuff. Yeah.
Or complete frustration because things are going calamitous around him.
Yes, yeah.
The other three, probably are the ones who've ironically done the least well. Like, Courtney Cox... Did Cougar Town, didn't she?
Cougar Town's pretty good. It was okay. It's quite funny because it's from the guy who created Scrubs. And it's very sharp, very quick, very funny. And it's just recently ended. And it was... I really liked it. I quite liked it. It wasn't necessarily mind-blowing, but it was still
It was okay. But nothing on the Friends level. Yeah. Matthew Perry did Studio 50 on the Sunset Strip.
I watched that.
Aaron Sorkin's one-season drama, wasn't it?
I watched it before I watched The West Wing, actually, and I quite liked it for the first bit. Then it turned really weird and political. Then I watched The West Wing, and then I realised that Aaron Sorkin tried to turn it into The West Wing.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say that the pilot of Studio 50 is brilliant.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's
and then it goes downhill straight away from there.
The second episode's okay. There's a brilliant, brilliant Gilbert and Sullivan gag where they do like a spoof of them trying to spoof themselves and etc. And Matthew Perry works really well alongside Bradley Whitford, and he kind of gets into the whole Sorkin vibe. But then the whole series dovetails into this massive 5-part thing about kidnapping and rescuing and international stuff, which just feels so out of sorts, and I only fully understood it once I watched The West Wing.
Once you've seen it,
it felt like a West Wing plot coming into it. So,
well, yeah, and you know, so you've got that with him, and then he obviously had his very well-known difficulties with drugs, which means you see of all the actors in terms of how they look, Matthew Perry changes so much through Friends. He goes terribly thin, he fattens up, he then goes down again, you know, so he had a lot of that.
Yeah.
And then Lisa Kudrow really is...
I'm really glad that you...
I know what you're going to do,
yeah.
She's not done a massive amount, but she's done one thing that you...
She's done quite a few.
Like, don't you?
Yeah, she went on to do her best role, which is a character called Valerie Cherish in a show called The Comeback, which it was co-created by Michael... I want to say Jay King, but he's... Is that Jay King? I'm not sure. Or Michael Patrick King.
Is he the guy who directed Sex in the City?
He created Sex in the City.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I think he did.
Was it Darren Star did?
Darren Star created it. Michael Patrick King directed the movies, or he directed a lot of the TV episodes.
Yeah, but he had a lot of creative input into Sex in the City anyway.
Yeah.
But they are, in 2005, I think, 2005, the first series of The Comeback was pretty much like it was set up as a behind-the-scenes... It was the raw footage of a reality TV show that was filming about Lisa Kudrow's character, Valerie Cherish. She was a 90s sitcom character from like the early 90s, trying to regain her fame by joining this like really new hip comedy. And the character she portrays is kind of like desperate wannabe famous again character. But the way it's done is like, because it's all raw footage, you see it go, no, cut. So it's before it gets edited out and everything.
Okay.
And the nuances in the character is so... It was like also like mockumentary for the US version that The Office came out. And so it was kind of like a slightly ahead of its time. And the performance that Lisa Kudrow gives, it's better than she ever did with Phoebe. And they came back to it, I think, a year and a half ago, with a second series, which followed 9 years later, and again the 9-year gap worked for it, and the six episodes afterwards it was even better than the first series. And I think that Lisa Kudrow probably deserves to be known more for Valerie Cherish than Phoebe. In a world it won't, because
it'll
Friends,
never happen. Yeah,
but
yeah, this is their defining role for the rest of their lives.
But Lisa Kudrow's career high is Valerie Cherish, because some of the stuff that happens in that series, it's a comedy, but then it's one of those HBO comedies where like a lot of British comedy where there's a lot of tragedy and a lot of where she kind of sets herself up to fail.
Right.
And you just see cracks form in this character, and it's Lisa Kudrow's just been, I can't say enough good stuff about that film. No, not film, about that series.
Well, it'll be really interesting to check that out then, definitely.
Yeah.
So they've all gone on and done various different things, but yeah, I think the crucial thing is that Friends is what they'll be known for.
It's about people who will be there for other people.
When the rain starts to fall.
Yeah. And they will be there for you.
Exactly. Like they've been there before.
Yeah. And they've been there for you.
And they'll
be there too.
That's all then from us for another episode of Pick a Flick, this Pick a TV Show special. Just leaves me to thank Mr. Latham for devoting his time, and you can find us at Black Hole Media on Twitter for all of your Black Hole Media fixes, and at Pick a Flick Pod on Twitter if you want to follow us and find out more. We're also on Facebook at Pick a Flick and at Black Hole Media. So until next time, thanks for listening.
For you, cue the thing, tune. Yeah.
So no one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's a joke, and you're broke, and you love life's DIY. Try that.
Shoot, yeah. Okay, go on.
Hang on.
So no one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's a joke, you're broke. You love life's the...
Away.
It's like you're always stuck in second gear, and it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year, but I'll be there for you.
When the rain starts to fall,
I'll be there for you.
What's the next line?
Like I've been there before. I'll be there for you.
Cause you're there for me too.
The Rembrandts couldn't have done that better.
Probably could.
They did. Right.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.